Good morning, 7:40 here on the Mighty 690. It is time for our Friday legislative update, and joining us, we have State Senator Virgil Peck. Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's good to see you back in the saddle here from
That's
when
right.
I was here last time, and we had a fill-in, which Chris did a great job. I don't know if he should be a little nervous about him taking over the spot or not. No, I'm kidding.
I don't know. You got to be careful. I got all sorts of things I can play. I'm working on it.
Okay,
all right, hey.
Yes, sir. It is a dangerous position.
That's right. You never know what I'm going to throw at you. So, hey, you've been a busy guy going around to this listening tour here.
I have been a lot of places. And, by the way, it will wrap up tomorrow. I will be in Cherryvale at 9 o'clock at the City Council Room, be there for about an hour, and then travel on to Parsons, to the Parsons Area Community Foundation, which is on Main Street. If a person doesn't know where that is, it's 1810 Main. At 10:30 to about 11:30, we'll be there visiting with citizens. But yes, I have been, James, traveling the district, spent time in Montgomery County, Neosho County, Elk County, Chautauqua County, LeBec County. Well, I guess I've spent time in all five of the counties that will be part of the legislative district. It's interesting the things that people bring up that I didn't necessarily know if they would or would not. We've talked about legalization of marijuana. We have talked about tax cuts versus spending cuts. Talked about legislative salary, which, by the way, we had a legislator, a Democrat from Olathe, retire from the legislature, and one of his primary reasons was he says that the financially he just couldn't do it. And so we do need to do something about legislative salaries. Not certain what we will do, but that has been brought up. And when particularly a legislator steps down saying I just can't afford to be in this position for $15,000 a year, that kind of shows we need to do something there. We've talked about ag subsidies, foreign ag land ownership. We've talked about the governor's voucher program for education, and some people don't even know that it exists, but the legislature is likely to look at that and possibly expand upon that or enhance her voucher program for education. We shall see. This is a program that's open to any student, whether they're homeschooled, private schooled, or public schooled, $1,000 vouchers that they can receive for some education expenses. I expect the legislature, like I say, to look at that and see how we can improve upon that, because it's been really too cumbersome for parents, they're telling me. One of the things that's been talked about a lot, and it's because I have brought it up, is Medicaid expansion. A lot of misinformation out there about Medicaid expansion. The governor's traveling the state at taxpayer expense, I might add, which she can do. It's not that she's doing anything immoral, but traveling the state at taxpayer expense. Her wish list for Christmas is Medicaid expansion. That's the only thing she wants for next session, or that's the biggest thing she wants, I should put it that way. Medicaid expansion, James, is something that I'm learning a lot of people don't understand, and then there's something I'm going to mention that really has not been part of the discussion from either side. Medicaid expansion would provide government-funded, taxpayer-funded health insurance for non-disabled working-age adults age 16 to 24 if they are at or below 138% of the federal poverty level. A lot of people don't realize, James, that there are a lot of individuals who are currently covered under Medicaid, because we keep hearing that if we expand Medicaid, it will cover the disabled, it'll cover children, it'll cover mothers, it'll cover a lot of individuals. Well, those people are already covered. If you are a pregnant mom at 150% or less of the federal poverty level, you have services, and for a year after birth, you also have Medicaid qualified for our physically, intellectually, and developmentally disabled individuals. They automatically qualified, so they're on Medicaid currently, so expansion would do nothing for them. And it goes on and on and on as far as the list of people who are currently covered. I'm not really a fan of Medicaid expansion, but honestly, I'm listening to people. I'm asking individuals, provide me a reason to vote for Medicaid expansion. Something else I think is important for individuals to know is 40% of the people who would be covered under Medicaid expansion are currently covered by private insurance or another government program. So we're going to take 40% of people off of private insurance or another program, put them on Medicaid expansion. And I don't know that that really makes sense.
Well, and then what does that do to the private insurance, you know, rates, the premiums and all that sort of thing? I mean, I would expect that they would go up just if you think about the economics of it.
You have less people on insurance, rates go up. That's just, it's the same way with anything. When it comes to taxes, you have more people paying taxes, taxes can go down. And that's something we might hit on here this morning. But something that's not being talked about a lot, two things I'll mention, then we'll move on from Medicaid expansion, is Democratic Socialist Bernie Sanders, that's what he calls himself. I'm not making that up. That's what he calls himself. He said, quote, "Every state must expand Medicaid as we work to make health care a right through a Medicare for all single-payer system," close quote. So Bernie Sanders is saying Medicaid expansion is a step that he wants us to take because it gets us closer to his idea of government-run, government-controlled health care. So that should cause everyone a little bit of pause, no matter what they think. But one thing that we don't talk about much, because we're state legislators, we hear on Medicaid expansion it will be a 90% federal funding, 10% state. I got that. People saying, well, we're turning down federal money. I got that. We're turning down money that Kansans have paid in. No, that's not correct. We get more money back from the federal government in Kansas than we send to Washington. So that's not an issue. But the United States debt is now right at $34 trillion. James, I have difficulty understanding $1 million, certainly $1 billion, but when you get to $1 trillion, it's over the top ridiculous. $34 trillion of debt. That's $260,000 per taxpayer. So, James, before I leave, I'll take your check for $260,000.
Yeah, we'll just see how that works.
see how far that check goes. Yeah. But so next year, the federal government budget is $6.8 trillion. I'm going to give some numbers here, so I hope people don't get lost. But the federal government budget for 24 is $6.8 trillion. However, revenue, in other words, income, is $5 trillion. Pretty simple math. Federal government spends $1.8 trillion more next year than they're scheduled to bring in. That will not help the debt problem we have now. Now, those, again, $1 trillion gets way beyond my capabilities. So,
sure. But when you boil it down, I mean, if we were running a business here, that would be kind of a red flag. The accountants wouldn't be very happy. I mean, there would probably be some problems.
There would be some issues. The accountants would start saying to the owners and the board, wait a minute, wait. Well, to make it understandable, I removed eight zeros, and put this in a family budget. So it would be like a family earning $50,360 in 2024. Yet they're spending $68,800. And they already have debt of $360,000. No one with any financial literacy at all would think that that makes sense. You earn $50,000, you spend $68,000, and you've already got $360,000 in debt, so you're going further and further in debt. Makes no sense. So what we're doing is mortgaging our children's future, and to me, James, somebody's got to be the adult in the room and say, nope, I'm not going to participate in this insanity. And so Medicaid expansion, even though I've had certain individuals from a certain industry talk about, well, this would help hospitals. It would help hospitals. It would provide some money, not save any of them, but it would provide some money. But I had one particular individual on the listening tour say, well, if you would expand Medicaid, then I could pay my employees some bonuses. Kind of nice. However, the question I ask, is it right to mortgage our children's future to pay bonuses to people now? I think not. I just think that's wrong. We've got too much of a mentality of, I want mine now. We'll let the future deal with the future. Well, James, the greatest generation, World War II generation, which would be your great-grandparents, my grandparents, and great-grandparents, and so forth, what if they'd have had that mindset of, well, let's just worry about us now, let's take care of us now, and then, well, our kids, grandkids, they'll have to take care of themselves. No, they sacrificed. They wanted to hand a better future to the next generations than what they had. Sadly, that's not the mindset in the United States anymore, and it's destroying our country. It is absolutely destroying the greatest country the world has ever known, the United States of America. So I have concern about that. I've mentioned this because in the context of Medicaid expansion, there's so much to look at. I understand the argument for. But again, nobody has given me really good reasons why I should vote for it. So we'll continue to listen.
Well, continuing the topic here, you know, when we talk about Medicaid expansion, correct me if I'm wrong, but does this kind of lead into, you know, there's overall big problems with the healthcare in general. I mean, we've come a long ways from the days when you got a itemized bill of, you know, Band-Aid, 5 cents, you know, all this stuff. I mean, now we're in a situation, you know, it seems like where, you know, the people who actually can afford at least to pay something, you know, they're paying for a lot of people who seem to be getting healthcare for free. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, there's some people who can't afford it, but the whole system in general, it's so Byzantine. It's so hard for, you know, average Americans to even understand what's going on and what the bills even mean anymore.
Healthcare system is a great system as far as providing care, but you are correct. And that's one of the arguments that some people are saying is, well, we've got people who can't afford to pay, so the rest of you need to pay more. There are a lot of things, improvements I believe we could make in the healthcare system, and as it relates to providing coverage for individuals and other options versus Medicaid expansion, because again, it's taxpayers paying individuals to be at 138% or less of the federal poverty level. James, if you are at a certain level of income and you are told by your employer, we'll just say KGGF, that they will provide a certain benefit for you as long as you stay under this income level, what incentive do you have to go above that income level? You have none. You're going to do your best. If I were to retire and start drawing Social Security at my age, I'm not old enough to retire. I'm 64 years of age. My full retirement is 66 years and 10 months. So I would take a reduced amount, and then I'm limited on how much money I can earn before they penalize or reduce my Social Security. If I were to do that, James, do you think I would try to make sure I earn less than that dollar amount? Absolutely. Nobody's going to try to improve if they're going to lose a benefit. And so I see Medicaid expansion also as incentivizing people to stay poor. That bothers me. I want to incentivize people to blossom, bloom, and be all that they can be. Of course, you got to get off. Some people got to get off their backside and get up and go do some things, but that's a whole other topic. But so Medicaid expansion has been talked about. We've talked about some tax issues, and I just usually mention it, and I guess it's because most people in the room agree with me. We need to reduce taxes, particularly property taxes. And so we've got some proposals out there, interesting proposals. The Democrats have thrown out some proposals, which I really appreciate them engaging in the process. Historically, they haven't engaged reasonably in the process. I think their proposals this time around are reasonable, some that I will have discussions with them as vice chair of the Senate Tax Committee and see what we can come up with that's sort of a meet in the middle type of a thing. We will be pushing for a single rate income tax for Kansans. So that will be a tax cut for every single individual in the state. We have talked a little bit about revenue, and that's something that, by the way, just briefly, revenue estimates were updated on the 9th of March last month. Our consensus revenue estimating group got together. They updated their estimates for fiscal year 24, which we are currently in, and fiscal year 25. They're doing the best they can do, James, but we're asking them to do the impossible. Just so you can prepare, the inflation rate in 2025 will be 2.6%. Well, we haven't even got into 2024 yet, but our revenue estimators say that they project it to be 2.4%. My frustration is we're asking the impossible, and then we build our state budget off of their estimates. Again, they made an estimate on the 9th of November, and then the end of November, they were wrong. They missed estimates for the month by $13 million, which is not that much off, but $13 million is quite a bit of money.
So is there a better way to do this?
I believe there is. Thank you for asking. And my proposal, which I made a recommendation in the Special Committee on Taxation that we met during the interim, my suggestion, and it wasn't a new idea with me, I've heard it bandied about a little bit over the years, and the committee made it as an official recommendation that the legislature consider basing our budget off of actual revenue collections over the last year, or I prefer over a 3-year average. So we're basing off of known numbers rather than speculating on what the revenue would be. But so far, we're still off of estimates. And the revenue estimating group, which is economists and government officials, they estimate in April and in November. They update their estimates. Historically, they have been wrong. And again, no disrespect to our revenue estimators, but we're asking them to do the impossible.
How do other states do this? I mean, is there another model that we could use to, you know, to kind of figure this out, to compare it all?
Great question. I don't have an answer to. I had that ask on the listening tour, so I've got to come up with an answer and find out what other states are doing, and is there something that seems to be pretty accurate? My understanding is Oklahoma sort of does it off of estimates, but that's a great question that needs to be answered. Let's find a state that has historically had something that works out better and is more even, because our estimators, sometimes they're way low. We bring in a lot more revenue than they expect. Sometimes they're way high. Neither is good. I prefer for them to be low versus high, because we base our budget off of their estimates. So we shall see what we can come up with there. We are ahead in the current fiscal year of fiscal year 2023 at this time, so we're okay on our budget, and we're still sitting on a boatload of money, $3.5 billion in balance in the checkbook, another $1.7 billion in our savings account or rainy day fund, which that part is good. I don't have a problem with a good, healthy balance in our budget stabilization or rainy day fund, but the $3.5 in the checking account, James, that money came from you and all other Kansas taxpayers. We need to give it back to them. And so I think some major tax reforms are on the horizon, which would be a good thing for Kansas. We need to be a more tax-friendly state. I have mentioned, back to the listening tour just briefly, the fact that we have looked at foreign adversaries' ownership of rural land in Kansas. Basically, that's China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, Venezuela. Don't allow them to own land in Kansas. And by the way, I was just recently, within the last 2 weeks, promoted to chair of the Senate Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. Go ahead if you got a question.
Well, just going to say, just in general, you know, I know you seem like you're kind of looking forward to this. You enjoy this actual, you know, committee, and this is a really unique opportunity, it sounds like.
Yes, thank you. I do. I enjoy agriculture issues. I've always lived in the country, and I understand agriculture issues. So being chair, I count it as a privilege and honor. A lot more responsibility comes with the position. I set the committee agenda. I determine what bills will be heard, what bills will be worked. And, of course, now I have already started hearing from ag groups saying, hey, we've got this idea. Hey, great. I'm glad for people throwing out ideas. But there's only so many committee hearings and so much time. But as chair, I will set the agenda. It requires extra time of me in the Capitol, which I don't mind. There's no extra pay by being chair, by the way. But looking forward to that opportunity. But rural ownership by foreign adversaries of rural land is a big issue, a matter of national security. And so will that go through the Agriculture Committee? I don't know. I don't really think it goes there. I think it goes more in the Federal and State Affairs Committee, but it potentially would be. And as chair of the Agriculture Committee, I would have certainly an impact on what we do or don't do there.
Alrighty.
Well, we've got to do a lot of good things for Kansas citizens.
That's some good stuff. Well, Senator Virgil Peck, thanks for joining us in Cherryvale. Remind us one more time on those dates and times.
9 o'clock tomorrow morning in Cherryvale at the City Council Room, and then 10:30 in Parsons at the Parsons Area Community Foundation.
Alrighty.
Look forward to hearing from people.
Thank you, sir. That's State Senator Virgil Peck here on the Mighty 690. News coming up here on KGGF.
The best in the West is South. South Roofing and Contracting, LLC. The Mighty 690, KGGF, Coffeyville.